Welcome to the City Club of Eugene's October 16, 2020 program. The City Club of Eugene, the League of Women Voters of Lane County, and the Springfield City Club host the United States House of Representatives race for Oregon's 4th Congressional District. This is the sixth program of our 2021 programming year. My name is Scott Coltrane, and I'm the City Club President. Support for the City Club is provided by our members and sponsors. You can become a member of City Club at our website, cityclubofeugene.org. We have both business and in-kind sponsors, including our diamond sponsors. Kaiser Permanente exists to provide high-quality, affordable healthcare services and to improve the health of our members and the communities we serve. More information at www.kp.org. Support comes from the University of Oregon. Since 1876, UO has helped Oregonians question critically, think logically, reason effectively, communicate clearly, act creatively, and live ethically. More information at uoregon.edu. Peace Health is proud to serve Eugene, Lane County, and beyond. As your hometown healthcare partner for more than 80 years, our mission is to keep you and your family healthy. Learn more at peacehealth.org. Lane Community College transforms lives through learning. LCC provides comprehensive, accessible, high-quality educational opportunities that promote student success. For more information, visit lanecc.edu. We would also like to acknowledge the generous support we have received from the City of Eugene and from Lane County. On to today's program. Oregon's Congressional District 4 includes the southern half of Oregon's coastal counties, including Coos, Curry, Douglas, Lane, and Benton counties, and most of Linn and Josephine counties. Today's program will be moderated by KLCC's Brian Bull. I would like to thank Joel Corrin of the Eugene City Club, Rebecca Gladstone of the League of Women Voters, and Len Goodwin of the Springfield City Club for coordinating today's program. Speakers today include two of the three candidates for the 4th District Congressional seat, Peter DeFazio, incumbent congressman, and Alex Scarlatos, author and forest management advocate. The third candidate from the Pacific Green Party, Daniel Hofe, did not participate in today's forum. Peter DeFazio, representing the Democratic Party, began his work in public service as a staff member for Oregon Congressman Jim Weaver. He was then elected as a Lane County Commissioner. After 4 years, he was elected to Congressional District 4, where he has served ever since. He is the chair of the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee. During his time on the committee, he has served as chair or ranking member on 4 of the 6 subcommittees: Aviation, Coast Guard, and Maritime Transportation, Highways and Transit, and Water Resources and Environment. DeFazio previously served as the ranking member on the House Natural Resources Committee, where he focused on energy, federal lands, ocean and fisheries, and Native American issues. Between earning a BA at Tufts University and an MA at the University of Oregon, he served 4 years in the Air Force Reserve. Alex Scarlatos, representing the Republican Party, spent his adolescence in Roseburg and attended Umpqua Community College. He served 5 years in the Oregon National Guard, including 9 months of deployment to Afghanistan. He attended Air Assault School and Sniper School, achieving the rank of specialist. He earned the U.S. Soldier's Medal for heroic action taken with 4 others to subdue an armed terrorist in France in 2015. Since leaving military service, he has written a book and acted in a movie about the incident and toured the country, encouraging others to take control of their lives. At home in Roseburg, he advocates for responsible forest management in southern Oregon. Brian, I hand it over to you.
Hello, I'm Brian Bull of KLCC News. I'd like to welcome all of our candidates and give a quick primer for this event. You're all kindly requested to answer the questions directly and practice civil and respectful decorum. Interrupting or talking over another candidate, as well as going over your allotted time, may result in your microphone being muted. We all look forward to hearing your positions on the issues. A quick note that Pacific Green Party challenger Daniel Hafe had been invited to this event. Various attempts were made to reach him before our start time, but he did not respond. So we are moving ahead with the two available candidates who are here, Republican challenger Alex Garlados and incumbent Democratic Congressman Peter DeFazio. Both of you, welcome.
Thanks.
And as we start, before we move into the questions, you each have 2 minutes for an opening statement. We're going on the order as randomized by the Oregon Secretary of State's voters pamphlet, which has Mr. Scarlatos first. So Mr. Scarlatos, your opening statement, please.
Sure. Well, I'm Alex Scarlatos. I was one of the three Americans that helped stop a terrorist attack on a train to Paris back in 2015. After that, I attended sniper school, air assault school, and basic leadership course from the Army, got out of the Army in 2017, did a book and a movie with Clint Eastwood, started a small business, and really the last 2.5-3 years, I've been researching a lot of the issues facing Oregon's 4th Congressional District, especially forest management and the lack of ONC money coming into county governments over the last 30 years, as well as due to what I survived in the middle of a gun-free continent. I'm incredibly pro-Second Amendment, and those are kind of the issues that drove me into politics originally, and I look forward to serving the people of Oregon's 4th Congressional District.
All right. And Congressman Peter DeFazio, your opening statement, please.
Well, thanks. Thanks to all our hosts for this event. People don't always agree with me, but they know where I stand on the issues, agree or disagree. I don't try and hide it. But Mr. Scarlatos isn't approaching the race that way. He has said, repeal the Affordable Care Act, and he's against government health care. But I see his ads, just saw it on CNN yesterday. He's gonna protect your health care and lower the cost of prescription drugs. Well, how's that work? When the Affordable Care Act goes away, 71,000 people in my district lose the Oregon health plan, no insurance. Another 155,000 seniors on Medicare Part D, they're going to be subject to a $2,400 copay that was done away with by the Affordable Care Act. When it's gone, they're paying $2,400 a year. And then finally, there's 317,000 people in my district who have what the insurance industry describes as pre-existing conditions. Before the Affordable Health Care Act, they couldn't get insurance, or they had to pay more, or they got exclusions in their policies. Now, the Republicans have been saying repeal and replace for 10 years, but they've never offered to replace. Trump has said for 4 years, repeal and replace, never offered a plan. I hope later in the debate, Alec will explain his plan, because apparently he's come up with a plan to provide these critical coverages that neither the president nor the rest of the Republican Party's been able to do. And then the other thing is we are in a deep recession and we need another COVID relief package. Small businesses need it. Individual payments to people would be in this bill, as with extended unemployment and other critical things, nutrition assistance for kids. All those things are in a bill I voted for 10 days ago. And when Alec was asked on September 22nd in Eugene, would you support any additional COVID relief? He said, no.
Congressman, your time is up for your opening statement. Thank you. We are now going to shift to the first question. And this one opens with Mr. Scarlatos on the topic of COVID-19. What specific steps should Congress take to help Americans adversely affected by the COVID-19 pandemic?
Well, despite what Mr. DeFazio says, I am in favor of certain aspects of the coronavirus relief, just not as a whole the way it's been proposed. I'm in favor of allowing the money to go to certain people. I don't necessarily agree in extending unemployment benefits, especially when we're trying to open back up. There's a lot of businesses that can't find good employees when they're trying to open back up because of the unemployment benefits that have been extended. I'm not in favor of bailing out large businesses or even the airline industry for that matter. I'm in favor of it going to small business owners and working class people who have been not able to get their jobs back, not people that want to work that are unable to.
Same question to you, Congressman DeFazio. What specific steps should Congress take to help Americans adversely affected by the COVID-19 pandemic?
No, Alex said definitively no. He did not qualify his answer. Would you support another COVID relief package? He said no. And we can provide the documents after the debate. I supported a package back in May, the Heroes One package. The Senate chose not to act. I pushed the speaker and others. I said, look, they say the price tag's too big, let's do a lower price tag and let's do another package. So 10 days ago, we did another package. And that package would provide $349 billion to small businesses for paycheck protection. Truly small businesses. Mnuchin last time defined it as, he said the Cheesecake Factory was a small business with 41,000 employees. No, we're saying now no more than 200 employees. Let's get the money to the people who really need it. And this time we're including restaurants and breweries and distilleries and other people who are left out. And extending unemployment, there are a lot of people who are on the federal unemployment who aren't eligible for state unemployment. They're gig workers. They are sole proprietors. They can't get state unemployment. If we don't extend the federal unemployment, they're out of luck. And then a lot of families are struggling to put food on the table, prescription drugs. Costs are very high. You know, keep the heat on, the electricity. They need those $1,200 individual payments that this bill would extend. And then we also would put a large investment into personal protective equipment for healthcare workers and others, and more investment in finding rapid testing and cures for coronavirus. It's a big package being discussed.
Representative Fazio, your time is up, and we have to move on to the next question. Thank you. Do you wear a face mask and socially distance in public? And do you think everyone should? And I'll send that one to you, Congressman DeFazio.
Absolutely. I always wear a face mask in public. When we're speaking on the floor, we are allowed to remove the mask while speaking, clean the microphone, and then put it back on. And I always follow those rules. And, you know, of course, the president hasn't followed those rules. I don't know about Mr. Scarlatos, but if everybody wore face masks, we could help contain this virus and stop the spread. It is aerosolized. It's airborne. I have to fly on airplanes. I wear an N95 on the airplane, and you've got to be very careful in inside spaces. And this winter is going to be very difficult. Wear your face masks. Observe social distancing. Don't go to bars and parties.
Right. And Alex Scarlatos, your answer, please. Do you wear a face mask and socially distance in public? And do you think everyone should?
Yes, I do believe that everyone should. And I do it in public, especially in large gatherings or even small gatherings if I'm around any high-risk individuals. And I do believe everybody should do their part to help prevent the spread of coronavirus.
Next question looks at the Affordable Care Act. And we'll open with Congressman DeFazio. Do you support efforts to repeal the Affordable Care Act? And if so, what is your plan to cover the people who will lose their insurance by that repeal?
I covered that in my open. No, I do not support repealing the Affordable Care Act, unlike my opponent who does. I described the impacts in my district. 71,000 people kicked off the Oregon Health Plan immediately. 155,000 people on Medicare Part D get a $2,400 copayment that was done away with by the Affordable Care Act. And around 300,000 people who have things that the insurance industry call pre-existing conditions will either get conditional insurance exclusions or they'll have to pay a heck of a lot more. For 10 years, we've been hearing from the other side of the aisle, repeal and replace, repeal and replace. They have yet to offer a plan. We voted 57 times in the House of Representatives when the Republicans were in charge to repeal it. We didn't vote once on replacing it. And Donald Trump has been saying the same thing. And he might get it done in the Supreme Court in November. So we need a plan to replace it if the Supreme Court overturns it. And I'm going to go for something stronger and better than the Affordable Care Act we have today, more like the House version we had the first time, which had national exchanges and a national not-for-profit plan that I believe would lead to a single payer.
I'll repeat the question for you, Mr. Skarlatos. Do you support efforts to repeal the Affordable Care Act? And if so, what would your plan be to cover all the people who lose their insurance by that repeal?
Well, I do believe in repealing the Affordable Care Act, but I believe in replacing it, and I believe in protecting people with pre-existing conditions again, despite what Mr. DeFazio says about me in the ads. I believe that we need to protect people with pre-existing conditions, and I believe that we need to allow people to be able to buy insurance across state lines. And I believe that that competition will force prices down and be a positive end result for the consumer. A lot of small business owners have seen their health insurance costs skyrocket since the Affordable Care Act has been passed.
And Mr. Skarlatos, I'm going to stay with you for this next question as a follow-up. What are your plans to address the cost of prescription drugs?
Well, I believe there's a few ways to do that. One of the most important things is getting it back made in the United States. And I believe that we should have a favored nations clause with any deal that we negotiate to help spread the cost of developing these new prescription drugs, many of which are made in the United States, across the entire globe, so we're not bearing the brunt of those costs.
Representative Fazio, same question to you, please. What are your plans to address the cost of prescription drugs?
The government of the United States of America should negotiate lower drug prices for every American. Every other industrialized nation on earth does that. You can go to Canada and get drugs made in America for a third or a tenth the price by American companies, because the Canadians negotiated. They negotiated hard. Every other industrialized nation on earth has done that. The Republicans don't want to take on the pharmaceutical industry. We need to take them on. You know, we get really good prices for the VA. The government negotiates prices. We pay about 20%, 25% for a lot of drugs. We get good drug prices for Medicaid. Same thing. Government negotiates. Well, let's do it for all Americans. Do it for the Americans on Medicare, and do it for the other Americans who are uninsured. And yeah, even do it for the people who are on health insurance. And after we take away the antitrust immunity of the health insurance industry, which I just passed in the House 2 weeks ago with a unanimous vote, including every Republican, then they won't be able to price gouge people when the price of drugs goes down. They'll have to lower the price of their premiums.
And you're listening to the debates for Congressional District 4 with candidates Peter DeFazio and Alex Skarlatos. We move now to the topic of Roe versus Wade. As of this moment, Senate confirmation hearings are underway for President Trump's Supreme Court nominee, Amy Coney Barrett, whose critics say they will undermine many longstanding issues, including Roe versus Wade. What is your position on that Supreme Court decision, and do you support federal funding for Planned Parenthood? We'll open with Alex Skarlatos.
Well, first of all, I do not believe in federal funding for Planned Parenthood. I do not believe that taxpayers who, religious or otherwise, might disagree with what Planned Parenthood is doing should be forced to fund a institution that they disagree with on a moral level. When it comes to the Supreme Court, I would be absolutely against packing the court in either party or whichever party is trying to do it. I do not believe in packing the court or trying to change the number of justices on the Supreme Court.
And Representative, again, same question. What is your position on Roe versus Wade, and do you support federal funding for Planned Parenthood?
Yes, I strongly support federal funding for Planned Parenthood. They are the primary health provider for tens of thousands of women in Oregon and millions across the United States of America, particularly when it comes to reproductive health care. And stripping that away is cruel. Then Roe versus Wade, I strongly support the decision. I don't believe the government has any right to be in the room when a woman is making one of the most difficult or critical decisions she might ever have to make in her life. She can talk to her husband, her partner, her minister, her doctor, her counselor, but the government's going to be in the room if Roe v. Wade is repealed. And Mr. Scarlatos says definitively he supports repealing Roe v. Wade. And I tell you what, if the Supreme Court repeals it, and I think they will with Ms. Barrett, then Congress can make it into a statute. It was deemed a constitutional right. They can say it's not a constitutional right. We can make it a statutory right that women have the right to control their own reproductive health care. And I will vote for that, and he would vote no.
And a quick follow-up for you, Representative. Your challenger mentioned that he is against packing the Supreme Court, a topic that's been brought up in recent weeks. Do you have an opinion yourself on packing the Supreme Court?
Years ago, I proposed term limits for the Supreme Court, and I'm going to dust that bill off and introduce it again. I don't think they should be appointed for life. The Constitution says they are judges for life. It doesn't say that they are Supreme Court judges for life. They can go to circuit court, a district court. They can become a magistrate somewhere. They'll still get their full salary.
Thank you. Next question addresses systemic racism and criminal justice. We've all heard the names of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, and more recently, Jacob Blake, to name a few Black Americans killed or seriously injured by police this year alone. What initial steps should be taken to address systemic racism in the criminal justice system? We'll start with you, Congressman DeFazio.
Well, I voted on George Floyd Justice and Policing Act. It did not defund the police, even though my opponent says it did, and others say it did. What it did do is ban racial profiling. It banned choke and carotid holds unless the life of the officer is in danger. It required police departments to use federal funds to purchase and utilize body cameras. I don't think that guy would have stood on George Floyd's neck for 9 minutes if he was wearing a body camera or if his colleagues had been wearing body cameras. The only reason he was caught was because someone took a video. I think that would change behavior a lot. We also would require states to set up standards for training police. Some states, you know, Oregon has a great police academy. It's really rigorous. Our people are good. But there are states that don't have police academies. They don't even have uniform standards. In some counties in the South, you walk in the sheriff's office, they give you a badge and a gun and say, there's the cruiser, go to work. We need strong national standards for policing. We also need to help the police. In Eugene, we have something called CAHOOTS. They take 20% of the 911 calls, the calls the police don't want to respond to and aren't designed to respond to. These are mental health crises. These are drug crises. And we should have more programs like CAHOOTS. And that isn't defunding the police. We're helping the police. I'm not going to take money away from the police to do that. Ron Wyden and I have introduced the bill.
Representative, your time is up for that question.
Funding program.
Thank you. Same question to you, Alex Scarlatos. What should be taken to address systemic racism in the criminal justice system?
Well, absolutely. I believe there are reforms needed. I do not agree with defunding the police, as Peter DeFazio inferred in his article in the Democrat Herald. However, I do believe that we need to address some of these issues. There are bad apples in law enforcement, as with any group of people. But I believe that we need to concentrate on these law enforcement officers that are perhaps fired from one agency or one state, and then simply move states and are hired by another agency. That, I believe, should be the federal government's job, not setting the standard when it comes to body cameras and things like that. In some departments that may not be able to afford them. Absolutely, that would be in favor of it, but it still should be up to a local decision. And again, Oregon has some fantastic police officers, and I do not believe in shifting funding away from police officers to any other agency. I believe that, sure, we can absolutely fund CAHOOTS and things like that, but at the end of the day, law enforcement officers need more training when it comes to dealing with people with mental health problems, not less.
You have both referenced CAHOOTS, which started here in Eugene in 1989, and that actually segues very nicely into my next question for you both. Police forces around the country are often burdened by incidents and calls that would more be apt to be called crisis intervention calls, as well as helping people who may be suffering from addiction issues or homelessness, other social issues. What are your thoughts on reallocating funding to social services nationally to reduce the burden from police forces and provide support for agencies better suited to handle those issues? We'll start with you, Mr. Skrilatos.
Sure. Really, I do not believe in doing that simply because the federal government shouldn't be mandating what local or state law enforcement agencies do with their funding. I mean, if we want to do that here, that's fine as long as the money does not come from law enforcement agencies. However, I would caution us in even moving in that direction simply because there's a lot of calls that sometimes start out as something that law enforcement does not want to deal with, or mental health crises that then turn violent. And if the person or only person responding is not armed or not trained to deal with that situation one way or another, then it could turn violent when it otherwise should not.
And same question to you, Representative Fazio. What are your thoughts on reallocating funding to social services nationally to reduce the burden from police forces and provide support for agencies better suited to handle those issues?
Well, the bill Ron Wyden introduced in the Senate and I introduced in the House would set up a new federal grant program. It doesn't take away from any existing federal assistance to law enforcement agencies. A new federal grant program, optional to communities, not a mandate, but I think a lot of communities would take advantage of it. I talked to a woman who worked for Coots, Black Lives Matter, a call a few months ago, and she talked about having been called to an incident with an African-American man holding a gun surrounded by SWAT. She managed to talk him down. He put the gun down. They came in, they handcuffed him. And then she said, take him to my van. And they're like, and she says, no, take him to the van. And they get to the van and she says, take off the handcuffs. And they did. And she drove him to the mental health treatment he needed. And the officers said, wow, we need to learn how to do that. But the police could learn from Cahoots in other communities like they are here.
The next question revisits the Second Amendment debate. And we'll stay with you, Representative Fazio. Do you support legislation to require background checks before all weapons purchases and secure storage of weapons in homes and automobiles?
I strongly supported Oregon's initiative 20 years ago to close the gun show loophole. You could walk into a gun show, no background check required. You could be a felon, you could be a felon fleeing the police, you could be anybody. No questions asked. Oregonians voted for that by 62%. Mr. Skrilatos says he is opposed to any gun laws. That means no background checks, someone who's severely mentally ill, someone who was a convicted murderer, they would have a right to have a gun under his plan. There can be reasonable limits on the Second Amendment, and that I think is a most reasonable limit. And in fact, I voted for a bill this Congress to expand the Oregon system of background checks at gun shows nationally, and also to put in place red flag laws where someone is threatening a former partner or is a severe threat to themselves, where a court, as in Oregon, can adjudicate a person should have their gun removed from the home until such a time as they become stable again.
And turning the same question to Mr. Skrilatos, do you support legislation to require background checks before all weapons purchases and secure storage of weapons in homes and automobiles?
So first of all, I would like to say that I don't support any new gun laws. Background checks are already law, and there is no gun show loophole, especially in Oregon. So I really just do not support any new gun laws. I mean, put it simply, they do not work and they're not effective. I mean, I'm a gun violence survivor. I helped stop a terrorist attack in the middle of basically a gun-free continent that is Europe. And this guy still got a fully automatic AK-47 and a handgun. Gun-free zones do not work. We learned that lesson here in Roseburg at UCC as well. I mean, it's unfortunate, but this is the society that we live in. And especially, again, due to especially lack of ONC funds coming into county government, law enforcement response time in some of these rural counties, especially in southwestern Oregon, have become increasingly longer. And I believe in protecting everyone's right to defend themselves and their home.
Thank you. The next question deals with the growing income disparity across the United States. And we've seen pay differences, salaries among gender and racial lines in the past, and it's still an ongoing problem for many people. What specifically would you do to address the growing income disparity in this country? We'll stay with you, Mr. Skrilatos.
Sure, I believe in lower taxes and lower regulation. It seems that a more complicated tax code only benefits the wealthy who have expensive lawyers and agencies to help them navigate around the tax code. I believe in simplifying it, and especially for the middle class, which again is the area that's decreasing while both other income brackets are increasing. We need a larger middle class, and I believe the best way to do that is allow small business owners to be free to run their business, be successful and prosperous. Peter DeFazio is one of the worst NFIB-rated congressmen in the House. I mean, I believe that we need to be friendly to small business and grow our middle class, not shrink it, and simplify the tax code.
And turning to Representative DeFazio, what specifically would you do to address the growing income disparity in this country?
I'll address that in a sec. I just want to jump back to the other question. Quote, Alex Garlatos, I just hate any gun law. It's an infringement. And he supports bump stocks. So let's talk about income disparities. Tremendously accelerated by Donald Trump. Massive tax cuts to corporations. Hey, they were going to hire millions of people and give all their employees bonuses. Know what they did? They bought back their stock. They gave their executives bonuses. They paid dividends. They bought back over $1 trillion worth of stock. They didn't invest in new plant and equipment. And oh, and the individual tax cuts, 83% of the benefit went to people who earn over $400,000 a year. I voted no. I expect Alex would have voted yes. He's for lower taxes. But there are other things that have an impact. Minimum wage. Alex is opposed to any minimum wage. Seriously, any minimum wage? Oregon has a decent minimum wage. I've voted to raise the federal minimum wage up to Oregon standards. He's not for any minimum wage. Well, there's 110,000 people in my district who work for minimum wage. He's going to pull a rug out from under them, and he's talking about taking care of people in the middle class and are struggling to make ends meet. Boy, that doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And then finally, there's our failed trade policy. I have voted against every failed trade agreement written by corporations since I got to the Congress. I opposed Bill Clinton on NAFTA, on China MFN, the WTO. I opposed Barack Obama when
time,
he proposed.
Time is up, Representative. I do want to pivot to Mr. Skrilatos on the topic of minimum wage, if he cares to have a rebuttal.
Sure. I do not believe in a federal minimum wage, and Oregon's minimum wage is already significantly higher than the federal limit, and I don't believe the federal government should be dictating, or a representative from Oregon should be dictating to a place like Nebraska what their minimum wage should be. I believe in states' rights. The cost of living is vastly different in other parts of the country, and I believe Peter DeFazio's ad is misleading and not honest.
All right. We now turn to climate change. What steps will you take to address climate change, especially given the massive damage and loss of life from impacts of fires, flooding, and increasingly powerful storms in the United States and the world? And we'll start with you, Mr. Skrilatos.
I believe that the best thing we can do to help prevent climate change here in Oregon is manage our forests better. We have these massive forest fires that dump carbon into the atmosphere, and then there's even more carbon dumped into the atmosphere by the same force then decaying where it stands. Instead of salvage logging, sequestering that carbon, bringing in jobs to the economy, money into the economy, and money into county governments. I mean, it seems to me like a pipe dream to think that we're going to stop climate change by forcing everyone to drive Priuses or something like that, or even passing a Green New Deal, while China is one of the world's biggest polluters, and we can't even keep our own forests from burning here at home. I mean, there's a massive fuel load in the forest, and this problem's just going to keep getting worse and worse, regardless of climate change, if we don't manage our forests properly.
And now turning to you, Representative DeFazio, what steps would you take to address climate change, both in the country and globally?
I believe climate change is an existential threat to the planet and life as we know it. and it must be dealt with seriously. Unfortunately, Trump backed us out of the Paris Peace Accords, which gave free rein to countries like China and others to just go their own way. The U.S. was the world leader. We have to become the world leader again. And in my committee, I passed out a transportation infrastructure bill. And we're living off the legacy of the Eisenhower era. It's fallen apart. It needs to be rebuilt. But it can be rebuilt with new, more climate-friendly materials that even invented carbon-negative concrete. Right now, concrete is 7% of our carbon emissions. Think of that. And then we can electrify the national highway network and begin to drive. We have 80,000-pound trucks. They're in production. Electric trucks, electric vehicles, and we can defossilize transportation. And at the same time, we would be creating hundreds of thousands, millions of family wage jobs, Davis-Bacon union jobs, because these are federal projects. And guess what? Everything that goes into them has to be made in the United States of America. I've got the strongest requirements for made in America of any part of the federal government in transportation. And I just closed two loopholes that the Republicans created for two Chinese bus and rail manufacturers. I just closed those, bam, in my last bill. So we're going to build this stuff here, put people to work here, and deal with climate change in a meaningful way.
All right. And that is time, Representative. We'll stay with you, though, for this next question here, and that addresses the education gap that we're seeing across the country. We're seeing different retention levels and graduation rates for minorities versus non-minorities. How would you address the widening education gap?
Who's up?
Representative Fazio. Sorry, I thought I said we were staying with you. Sorry.
No, I missed it if you did. This is a big problem in Oregon at primary, secondary level and funding. The state's trying to deal with that. The federal government hasn't paid its fair share to the state in terms of dealing with special needs students. I support full funding from the federal government that's been promised for decades to take that burden off our local schools so they can deal with all the other students. But beyond that, a post-secondary education at a community college, I've donated 278 scholarships out of federal congressional pay raises that I haven't taken to help people get technical degrees at community colleges throughout Southwest Oregon. There's a great opportunity out there for people with technical education. And there's also, a lot of people want to go to four-year school. So we're going to help them with the costs of that. I support the federal programs that the Republicans cut when they were in charge for the last 8 years, and we can't restore because of Mitch McConnell, to allow people to go into public service and work down their federal loans, to give students the same interest rate that the Federal Reserve gives to the largest banks in the United States of America. During this time of COVID, the HEROES bill would suspend all loan repayments for students and interest payments for students until the pandemic is over. That would help a great deal for people to get a better education.
Same question to you, Mr. Skarlatos. How would you address the widening education gap in the country?
Well, especially here in Oregon, part of the problem is the lack of ONC funds coming into county government, and we need to figure out some sort of resolution to where the ONC bill stands as it is. We are not seeing nearly the revenue we were seeing back when we were out managing the forests. And as a result, education has suffered as well. I also believe that we are probably pushing too many students to get four-year degrees and not enough into the trades. It seems nowadays that a lot of colleges have become degree factories and people getting degrees in things that they can't necessarily find jobs in. And I believe that we should educate students not only on which degrees to get, but which are the most beneficial in the long term when it comes to employment as well.
All right. Well, we'll stay with you, Mr. Skarlatos, for this next question. How would you help voters to reconnect paying their taxes with receiving government services?
What do you mean by that exactly?
Actually, I need a clarification myself because that was passed on to me by someone at City Club here. I'm thinking it's about reconciling taxes with perhaps COVID-19 relief.
Well, absolutely. The biggest problem with any kind of bailout package when it comes to coronavirus or anything else for that matter is the huge amount of money we're adding to the national debt every year. And as a young person, I find that this is an increasing worry among younger people. We don't believe that the national debt is sustainable, at least at this rate of growth. And whenever we add or promise new bailout packages or new government programs, we always need to be cognizant of the amount of money that it's adding onto the national debt, because at the end of the day, most of these are not funded by the taxpayers.
Representative Fazio, same question.
Well, earlier, Mr. Scarlato said we should further lower taxes. The tax cuts pushed through with only Republican votes by Donald Trump added about $3 trillion to the deficit. Corporations, as I said earlier, they didn't use their $1.5 trillion to employ people or build new plant and equipment. They used it to buy back stock, to pay dividends, to enrich their executives. Yeah, a few of them gave out one-time bonuses to their employees, but no substantial pay raises. And he wants to lower taxes further. You can't, you know, solve that problem by lowering taxes further. And people who earned over $400,000 a year got 83% of the benefits. Guess what? I think people who earn over $400,000 a year, just like Joe Biden says, they could afford to pay a little more for the community of this country. And also the corporations. The rate was lowered to a point that they didn't even expect, 21%. The chair of Ways and Means, who's a pretty conservative Democrat, said, God, they would have been thrilled with 25%. 21% was just nuts. It cost us another $800 billion. So I think the corporations could afford to pay a little more. And we should close the overseas loopholes for all these corporations who hide their money overseas but enjoy services here in the United States of America.
Thank you. Now moving on to elections. In a couple instances over the last 20-some years, we've actually seen the popular candidates lose because of the electoral college system that's still in place and has been for a long time here in the United States. And we'll start with you, Congressman DeFazio. What is your position on abolishing the electoral college?
I have long advocated abolishing the electoral college. Think of it this way. In Wyoming, there are less people than in my congressional district, and each one of them gets 3 votes in the electoral college. In my district, each person gets 1/5 of a congressional vote, and they get 2 1/5 votes. So these little states, Alaska, Wyoming, North Dakota, South Dakota, et cetera, have an outsized role in the electoral college. And electing presidents, which has only happened twice in recent times, with a minority of the popular vote, I think is a huge problem. I think we should just go to a national popular vote program. And then say, oh, well, presidents would never go to little states. They don't go to little states now. They target 10, 12 states. Those are the only places they go. I haven't seen Trump or Biden show up here. They're not going to show up here this fall. If they had to go everywhere in America, they might even go to Alaska and ask for votes. Popular vote is the best way to do it.
And turning to you, Mr. Skrilatos, what are your thoughts on abolishing the Electoral College?
Well, I'm absolutely against it. I mean, we're a republic, not a democracy. I feel that if we abolish the Electoral College, rural America would have an even smaller voice than they do now. It's absolutely a terrible idea, and it would mean that the entire country was run from New York and California, and I do not agree with that whatsoever.
All right. Next question. Still staying on the topic of elections and election security. Between intelligence agencies determining that foreign countries have actually tried to interfere with American elections, and also the debate over the reliability of mail-in ballots, please describe your position on election security, foreign intrusion, and voter suppression. And we'll turn that question first to you, Mr. Skrilatos.
Sure. When it comes to, I guess, tampering with our elections, we should find parties responsible and punish them, whether it be a foreign country or someone here trying to interfere with the ballot boxes or the vote by mail. As a whole, I mean, voter fraud is something very small. With this large push towards vote by mail, we need to be very cautious. I mean, Oregon has been doing vote by mail for almost 30 years now, and we've been very successful at it. But it still has its flaws. And while I agree that we should allow anyone who's legal and able to vote, we need to be cautious that by making it so accessible, it does not become unsecure and easy to be tampered with.
Representative DeFazio, same question to you. Please describe your positions on election security, foreign intrusion, and voter suppression.
There's still about a dozen states that don't have paper ballots, electronic only, and the Russians are trying to hack this election just like they did the last one. That's not secure. And this administration has put no effort into helping those states. We put $5 billion in the CARES Act to help states upgrade, go to paper ballots, and be able to have security. The Republicans refused to do it there. And, you know, that's just incredible to me. The Russians are in this election just like they were in the last election. And they are trying to sow discord in this country. You know, the bots are, they're out there. We've seen bots in my congressional race, Russian bots in my congressional race. They used to just go for Senate races and the president. They're expanding their efforts. And yet this administration, the president has appointed a totally unqualified person as head of the National Intelligence Office, the DNI, Director of National Intelligence. He's a just a Trump supporter, one-term congressman or two-term congressman from Texas. And he's trying to deny the Russians are interfering. They're trying to downplay it for whatever reasons.
On a related note, we have seen a lot of debate and a lot of people wishing to reform how districts are drawn up based on representation. And there's also been many complaints about gerrymandering and redistricting, redrawing basically a district's lines to best suit an incumbent candidate or party. We'll stay with you, Congressman DeFazio. What are your views on the issue of gerrymandering and redistricting?
I support national legislation, which can be done constitutionally because these are federal elections, to require that all the states have independent commissions, well-constructed, truly independent commissions. That initiative that they attempted to offer in Oregon was not balanced, not well-written. The one in California, the system they have, that's pretty good. Arizona, pretty good. Iowa, good. Let's have a good system and do it nationally, because in 2010, when the Republicans cleaned house, they gerrymandered to the point where they said, wow, Congress could never go Democrat again in this decade, except they never anticipated Donald Trump and the disasters he's brought on the country. So we did get the House back. But, you know, what's happened with gerrymandering is districts are either red or blue. My district isn't. This is a purple district. It can be either Republican or Democrat. There's only 8 even districts in the United States of America. Most of them are deep red or deep blue, which means it's all about the primary. It's all about the Democratic primary, all about the Republican primary. That doesn't leave hardly anybody who's going to work for middle ground like me. I've passed 3 major bipartisan bills in this Congress, the most partisan Congress, historians say, since the post-Civil War era. One to save the post office, one to keep our ports dredged here in Oregon and around the country, and a third one to take away antitrust immunity from the health insurance industry. The postal one passed with 88 Republicans. My other 2 bills passed unanimously with Republicans, but that's very rare now because of the polarization as a result of severe gerrymandering.
All right, Representative, thank you. And turning now to Mr. Skarlatos, what are your thoughts on redistricting and gerrymandering?
Absolutely. I think that gerrymandering is something that we all should be fighting against. I mean, whether it's Republicans in a red state or Democrats in a blue state, it always seems like the district maps are drawn to favor whichever party's in power. I would probably stop short of a federal mandate to do that. I think still think it should be done on the state level, but I do agree that we do need to move the needle in the other direction on that with things like independent commissions, as long as, of course, it's structured in a way that is truly independent.
All right. You now each have 2 minutes for a closing statement, and we'll repeat with the order that we started off with, beginning with Alex Skarlatos. Go ahead, you have 2 minutes.
Sure. Well, I'm very excited for the opportunity that we've been given. We've done an excellent job in this race, and I think it's probably the most competitive and one of the most competitive races in the country. I would like to say that I am in favor of term limits. Peter DeFazio has been in office longer than I've been alive. He's had 33 years to run this district into the ground, and we're now the poorest congressional district in the state. That's something I would definitely look at changing when it comes to diversifying the economy of Oregon's 4th congressional district. Peter DeFazio has also received about 57.49% of his money just from PACs. That's something that I believe also needs to be reformed. We should not rely on PACs and corporations and special interest groups to keep incumbents in Congress. That's, I think, one of the biggest problems here in this country is the incumbent advantage. We, on the other hand, have received just a little over 1% of our donations from PACs. There's a lot that needs to be done in this country, and this kind of hyper-partisanship that exists these days is not healthy for anybody. We need to work across the aisle and pass bills that actually benefit places like the 4th Congressional District, which I feel has been ignored over the last 33 years and probably even longer. And doing things like banning the Electoral College would make that problem much worse, not better. And thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
And Representative DeFazio, you have 2 minutes for your closing statement too now.
Well, thanks. Over 60% of Alex's contributions come from out of state. And yeah, I get money from PACs. A teacher's PAC gave me $5,000. There's 30,000 teachers in that PAC in Oregon. The carpenters, they gave me $5,000. There's 9,000 carpenters, union members in Oregon. The realtors gave me a contribution. There's 18,000 realtors in Oregon. Those are people who band together to promote the interests of their business. Realtors, you know, have interests. Carpenters want to build things. Teachers want to teach. Yeah, I have taken money from those kind of PACs. But let's get back to the issues here. We finally got some issues on the table. Alec has spent an incredible amount of time. He's been ducking two TV stations for 5 days now on his statement that there should be no more COVID relief, which tonight he tried to say, well, he didn't really mean that sort of kind of part of it or something. Well, then why doesn't he go on those TV stations and explain that? He runs ads saying one thing, I'm going to protect, I'm going to fight for your health care, I'm going to fight for lower prescription drug costs. At the same time, he says he doesn't believe in government-supported health insurance. At the same time, he wants to repeal the Affordable Care Act, which means that 71,000 people in my district lose their Oregon health plan the next day. It means that 155,000 seniors on Medicare Part D get hit with a $2,400 premium next year, a copay, which was done away with by the Affordable Care Act. And 300,000 people with pre-existing conditions are going to have trouble getting insurance. They're going to pay more for it, or they're going to have exclusions in their policy because they have a pre-existing condition. So we finally got some issues on the table here. And I hope he, after this debate, takes some time to explain his health plan that the Republican Party and the president haven't been able to come up with. I'll be very interested in that. But I want to thank voters for all their support over the years, and I want to ask for them to vote for me again. I've represented you honorably, and I put a lot of energy into this job. And
we have to wrap up now for time. Thank you very much. That concludes our debate for Congressional District 4. I want to thank both of our candidates, Peter DeFazio and Alex Skarlatos, for their time and their participation. Election day is November 3rd. Remember to have your ballots mailed by October 27th or dropped off at an official ballot drop-off box by 8 p.m. on November 3rd to have your vote counted. I'm Brian Bull of KLCC News. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you, guys. Have a good one. Appreciate it.
This has been our October 16th, 2020 program. The City Club of Eugene, the League of Women Voters of Lane County, and the Springfield City Club host the United States House of Representatives race for Oregon's 4th Congressional District. Before we proceed, I'd like to recognize some gold sponsors, Luvas Cobb, Network Charter School, and AARP of Oregon. It is our expectation to have these taped conversations available by Fridays at noon. We want to thank all of you for supporting us during these troubled times. Before we thank our speakers today, there are a few quick announcements. Thank you to our in-kind sponsors, KRVM 91.9 Radio, PAC Info and Simplified Computing LLC, Dot Dotson's Photography, and Network Charter School. And a special thank you to public radio station KLCC 89.7 for airing City Club programs each Monday at 7 p.m. And thank you to Community Television of Lane County, Cable Channel 29, for televising recent City Club programs. Next week, we continue our election season programming when we welcome Oregon House District 13 candidates, Nancy Nathanson and David Smith, along with the House District 14 candidates, Rich Cunningham and Julie Fahey. KLCC's news director, Rachel McDonald, will moderate the session. You may send questions to the City Club's executive director through Monday, October 19th, and the program's moderator will select those that will be asked. Send questions to administrator@cityclubofeugene.org. Please join us for the next election candidate forum on October 23rd. More details and information about future programs can be found online at the City Club's website, cityclubofeugene.org. And I want to inform you that City Club of Eugene has developed podcasts to inform our residents and the larger community on varying subjects. City Club of Eugene, Oregon provides these podcasts to build an informed public by providing facts and opinions on diverse civic matters. We're also on Facebook and YouTube. Please visit www.cityclubofeugene.org. We have podcasts available on our website, including Short-Term Rentals in Eugene. Airbnb ranked Eugene number 2 in the U.S. as a popular place to visit. It has been ranked by Realtor.com as number 2 in constrained housing in America. How would city regulation of short-term rentals like Airbnb and VRBO affect the owners, neighbors, and the city of Eugene, Oregon? Hear the perspectives of those who could be impacted by these regulations. Going to prison to learn. College students and incarcerated students learn together in the prison system thanks to a University of Oregon prison education program called Inside Out. It's the largest such program in the world. Internment of Japanese residents in World War II. After Pearl Harbor was attacked by Japan, America declared war and began taking Japanese residents to internment camp. This podcast of the City Club of Eugene looks at the impact of internment on the detainees and their descendants, as well as America's reactions at the time of the internment. You'll also hear about how the internment was carried out here in Eugene. And finally, two programs on social justice and policing, Alternatives to Policing, Reorienting the Scope of Law Enforcement. When studying police reform, how can we cultivate and enforce greater equity and justice and implement safety in our community? Is Eugene, Oregon committing sufficient funds and support to the people in programs that can provide alternatives to law enforcement? And finally, racial justice and police accountability. After the death of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, and Armand Arbery in the spring of 2020, City Club of Eugene developed a focus on racism, police accountability, and local issues related to racial justice. Please join us and listen to these podcasts. I want to thank today's speaker for a great program. Thank you, Congressman Peter DeFazio, candidate Alex Scarlatos, and moderator Brian Bull. This concludes today's program. Be well and stay safe.